You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
Good morning, everyone. Seems like we've been talking about healthcare for decades because, of course, we have been. It's an issue in the presidential campaign. It came up in the debate earlier this week. And the question is there a right to healthcare? Is it a government responsibility? Is it your responsibility? Let us know at 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake@thetakeaway.org. Your responsibility or a government right that you can demand at will? Speaking of government responsibilities, here's a few more.
Getting it right is as important as getting it done quickly. We can and we will do both.
That's Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson at an afternoon press conference yesterday outlining more steps the government is taking to intervene in the financial markets. After a day of nervous selling and jittery freaking out, the markets appear to be embracing stability this morning. The markets have not been wildly fluctuating like yesterday. It's a day after the unprecedented coordinated interest rate cut by the Federal Reserve, the Bank of England, the European Central Bank, and the Bank of China. Other banks have followed suit. U.S. futures are up today after a six-day losing streak, which saw indices falling by more than 15%. And today, the Bush administration is also reportedly considering taking ownership stakes in a number of U.S. banks, actually offering money to the banks in return for an ownership stake, much like the U.K. did yesterday. Michael Hunter joins us. He's on the line from London, and he's a reporter, markets reporter for the Financial Times. Michael, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure, John. Good morning.
So a couple of things. Describe this arrangement. We certainly heard about it yesterday in London, that money is being offered by the British Treasury. And if banks take it, then they have to give up some sort of ownership stake to the government in London. But in Washington, is it going to work the same sort of way?
Well, we're not entirely sure what the Washington idea will be, how closely based on the what's now being referred to already as the British model, the Washington plans will be. But in terms of the British model, effectively, it's going to make the government a major holder of preferential stock in a series of UK high street lenders. According to one measure, when we've thrown a slide rule over the numbers as much as we can do at the moment, it would mean every taxpayer in the UK effectively holding about £1,600 worth of stock per capita in the banks. Now, the government's hoping that once the system is restored to something like normal, those preferential shares which it holds will rise in value, and the taxpayer should get much of the money put into the scheme back, if not all of it. And if it all goes really well, they could even see some kind of a profit in the long term.
Now, does that make you feel better as a taxpayer to be this sort of abstract shareholder who might get it right?
I think there's a lot of anger on the high street, similar to the kind of outcry that you saw over there in the States with the original Paulson bailout plan when that failed to get through the House of Representatives. But I think there's also a growing realization that people are aware that something really does need to be done, that we're looking at the kind of systemic crisis, you know, not seen since the war.
And certainly psychologically, the idea of personal savings accounts as an alternative to Social Security is a barrier that we've already crossed in the United States, this idea that the government would take ownership stakes. But let's review the bidding a little bit, Michael. I mean, we've got an insurance company, an AIG, that's owned by Washington, right? We've got now these banks that are being owned. We've got the Federal Reserve. I mean, what's next? ATMs by the federal government? It's a full-service economic institution, the federal government is. That seems pretty broad.
Well, I think what's happening is you're seeing the extent to which the hitherto private international financial system has to be underwritten by government. We're seeing that very, very clearly demonstrated with these changes in ownership, these nationalizations, governments taking shares in large hitherto private financial institutions, savings being underwritten around Europe and elsewhere in the world. And that shows you really exactly how national government really has always underpinned this system. And the way in which the private development of the system, the development of the system in private hands has failed, brings back to mind the central role that government really has always had to play in the system in setting interest rates, right, in underwriting it all.
Well,
it,
of course, it, not always playing that role. Well, I mean, at the turn of the 20th century, the private sector was really bailed out by the federal government the United States.
I think that's true.
And now we're seeing it on a global scale, it seems like.
We're also becoming, I think, a little bit more aware of the point at which market economics can't function on its own.
Right.
And when we've lost the degree of clarity which has always existed in traditional banking and things have become too complicated, the confusion that that creates means governments have had to step in. And I think one of the main lessons we'll learn from the crisis is you can't have a situation where the only people who understand complex debt and financial instruments are the people who have written them and the people who are selling them to each other. I don't think regulators will let that happen again.
Right. Michael Hunter, markets reporter for the Financial Times, talking about the possibility of a broad democratization of the financial sector with all these transformations that are taking place. Question, Michael, thanks for joining us, by the way, from London.
My pleasure.
And question, is there any place where banking is simple?
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.